You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter, J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio one more time. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat. Joining me, as always, is Brendan Lear. And Brendan, you had other responsibilities that you couldn't be around for our two guest interviews today.
I know, and I have to top up my income, even though you and I both make, six-figure incomes from my radio show. I still have to top it up by having a proper job as well. So, unfortunately, I could not attend.
Well, it's understandable.
I'm here now, Kels. I'm here now.
It's true. A couple intriguing guests today. We're going to be talking to Matt Lindland first off. And he has a lot of interesting comments on the recent events in the middleweight division of the UFC. He's going to be cornering Dan Henderson, who's fighting Vitor Belfort in this weekend, the American debut of Pride. So Matt Lindland will be on the show trying to give us some insights on what his future might hold, where he wants to go next. So that's an interesting interview. And then after that, we'll be talking to Jeff Joslin, who is a Canadian, one of the better Canadian welterweight fighters. He won the Apex Welterweight World Championship this prior weekend, knocking out Neri Shakur in that event. So we'll be talking to Jeff Joslin, who has, we heard John Fitch talk about his fight with Jeff Joslin last week when John Fitch was on the program. So we'll have Jeff on the program as well. And then at the end of the show, we'll talk about the Pride card this weekend, and Brendan and I will make our predictions.
Excitement galore.
Exactly. Well, stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
The International Fight League returns to Portland's Memorial Coliseum Thursday, November 2nd for the World Team Championship semifinals. Hometown hero Matt Lindland leads his team, the Wolfpack, into battle against Boss Rutan's Anacondas. And Pat Miletich pits his team, the Silverbacks, against Carlos Newton's Dragons.
Plus, two super fights you don't want
to
miss.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a Full Contact Fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us on the program, straight from Las Vegas, is Mr. Matt Lindland. Matt, I take it you're out in Vegas, cornering your buddy Dan Henderson.
Yeah, I'm out here. That's one of the reasons why I'm out here, for sure. Big Pride show this weekend.
Looking ahead to Dan's fight, how much, I know Dan was training with Sean Tompkins a little bit. You guys, you know, as far as your corner man, what kind of approach are you expecting for Dan to have against a fighter like Vitor Belfort?
Well, Sean is a new addition to Dan, his training and everything. He's been working with him for his last couple fights. Sean's going to be down in the corner with us, but I don't think that's going to use a lot of what we do and who Dan's voice he's going to cue in on down there. And we've got a pretty solid game plan, and I don't necessarily think it's the stand and strike with one of the most dangerous strikers in the sport. Mm-hmm. It's to use Dan's striking to to facilitate his world-class wrestling.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned some other reasons as well. Anything else going on with Matt Lindland?
Oh, there's always stuff going on with Matt Lindland, partner. Just staying busy, I manage a lot of fighters and train my IFL team, and, I'm looking to book myself more fights all the time and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot happening, a lot of people in Vegas, a lot of people, run their operations out of Vegas. So, yeah, there's a lot of things to be discussed and see where my next fight's going to land.
Well, that's kind of what I was hinting at, with the Pride execs being in town there. The recent fight between Rich Franklin and Anderson Silva, Matt, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this as well, the drum beat is getting considerably louder for people. You know, a lot of people are looking at the UFC and wanting to see Matt Lindland back in there. Your thoughts, is there anything you can tell us? Have you had any talks with the UFC at all?
I consistently talk to every organization. I mean, I got five guys that fight in the UFC, so, I mean, we're talking on a pretty regular basis about a lot of different guys and different opportunities for everyone. But, it would be nice to fight in the UFC. I've always liked their organization. That's where I feel I started my career and, you know, where I would love to be. I would also like to fight for Pride. I've always felt that the Pride's put on the most exciting shows with the rules. I love their events, and they've got great fighters as well. I mean, I think there's there's a lot of other smaller organizations that, you know, aren't going to be the smaller for very long. I think locking fighters down for long-term contracts is going to soon be a thing of the past, and fighters are going to be able to fight where they want to fight and negotiate the best deals for fights instead of, organizations trying to secure, you know, the best fighters and keeping them under contract for long times.
Right. Well, I think one of the reasons a lot of people are at the UFC and considering what you could bring back to the organization is due to the fact that a lot of people, Matt, are saying that you match up very well against Anderson Silva. And looking at the UFC middleweight division...
I'm a bad matchup for anybody in the UFC right now. I'm a bad matchup for anybody that was in that Pride Grand Prix. I feel like, you know, if Anderson Silva grabbed my hand in the tie clinch, I'd probably take him down and slam him on his head. I don't think I was saying that, get the shit kneed out of me. I don't think Rich ever wrestled, so maybe, he doesn't know what to do in there.
Well, what were your thoughts, Matt? You know, most people, I think it's safe to say, were picking Rich Franklin to win that fight. Everyone thought that Anderson Silva was going to be the biggest test to his title so far. What did you expect to happen? Were you surprised at his game plan?
Exposed. Rich is a great fighter. He's really talented. He's a hard worker. I think he hadn't been tested in the UFC. They hadn't put, any real top competition against him. They've really been kind of keeping him away from guys. They finally brought in a guy that was, a legitimate top 10 ranked opponent. It elevated a guy that was top 10 all the way up to number 2 in the rankings off of one win. Mm-hmm. And, that was the first real quality opponent that I think Rich has faced since he's been in the UFC.
Now, you mentioned that you'd like to fight for Pride, you'd like to fight for the UFC. Do you think, and you also talked about the fact that you think eventually fighters will get to the point
where... I would like to fight actually anywhere. I just want to fight the best fighters.
And yeah.
If I can get more quality opponents in Pride or the UFC, or, if I can go somewhere else and get quality opponents, then I'm not opposed to doing that. It's kind of odd that everyone looks at it like if you're not in one of these two organizations, then you're not one of the top guys. I think that's ridiculous.
Well, I think, like you mentioned, people are, not only is it starting to change within the organizations themselves, the way that they have to negotiate contracts, or will have to, but I think fans are starting to realize that slowly but surely, and I wanted to ask you about your last IFL fight, and there were a lot of people talking about the fact that you took on Jeremy Horn, and there was a matchup of two of the top 10 middleweights in the world.
That could have been a world title fight
in
any organization. Jeremy and I are both consistently been in the top five for years in that weight class. I think both of us would probably be right in the top 10 or just out of the top 10 at 205. And definitely in the top five at 185. So you look at that and, you could say that, that could have been a world title fight in any other organization or any show that would have said this is a title fight. Since there is no true world rankings and world championship, each organization has their own belt. That's you know, it's that's something I think we need to get to in the sport.
Well, in saying that, then I'll ask you: did you feel that that fight with Jeremy Horn got the coverage and hype that it deserved?
No.
No.
You know, I think if it would have been on live TV, it would have. Mm-hmm. But I had contract restrictions with my WFA contract that restricted that show, that fight, from being on live TV. You know, and that's the kind of things I'm talking about. You know, each organization putting their, you know, their little rules in their contract, saying, you know, if you sign with us, you can't do this and that and the other thing. And you know, and the other organizations aren't getting you the quality opponents. They aren't getting you enough fights. They aren't putting on enough shows. You need to look elsewhere if you want to fight. And I want to stay as active as I possibly can. I want to fight as often as I can. And, you know, being, you know, confined to one organization limits that.
Well, I want to ask you about the WFA, but first, you obviously some high praise there for Jeremy Horn. Where does that rank, where does that fight, that win rank in your career then, Matt? A very impressive TKO victory over Jeremy Horn. Where does that rank in your career?
I think that, you know, Horn's somebody that I've looked up to as a fighter, and, you know, I think he's been in this sport for a long time. He's beaten a lot of good guys. He's another guy that will fight anybody, and he'll go fight it anyway. And, I mean, shoot, the guy's fought, you know, Randy Couture at heavyweight, and I mean, the guy is, he's a top-level guy. So beating him, I think, is a, you know, it's a good notch in the belt. You know, it wasn't something that surprised me that I was going to go out there and beat him. I was a little surprised I caught him right on the button and he went down with a knockout. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I knew the win was going to come. I just didn't see it coming that way.
Now, with the WFA, there's a lot of people speculating on when their next card is going to be, what is going on with the organization. There's a lot of, you know, various rumors circulating, and we don't really like to get into the business of rumors.
Yeah, but if you hear any that might be true, let me know. I'm wondering when they're going to do another show, too.
Well, okay, so then there's no insight that you can offer us as a signed fighter with the WFA on what's going on there?
My contract with the WFA is going to expire in November.
Oh, okay.
So unless they want to renegotiate it and, you know, guarantee me that they're going to put on more than one show every year and a half, you know, we'll see.
Well, outside of Anderson Silva or Rich Franklin, the two obvious names, you said you wanted to fight the best fighters as much as possible, and
well,
some guys
are
probably
Anderson
else out there.
Or Rich, are those the two best guys out there? Or
well, no, not necessarily.
No, not necessarily. I think my pick to win that Grand Prix is probably going to be Paulo Filho. The guy's a top-notch guy. If there was an organization that was willing to step up and try to put that fight together, maybe that's the direction I'm going to go. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a look at all my options and make the best decision based on you know what I need to do to support my family and move my career in the right direction.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, who else out there? You said you want to match up against the best fighters. And then you look at people like, you know, Dan Henderson, Misaki,
yeah,
Dennis Kang.
Don't take that the wrong way. I wouldn't turn down three opportunities to beat up a guy like Ken Shamrock or Hoyce Gracie either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody wanted to throw those kind of fights at me, you know, where you get huge buys and exposure and you get to beat up a guy that's way past his prime and look at doing it, you know, I'll take those opportunities too. If you want to set me up in the ring with somebody like those.
Well, even in the IFL now, you've got Carlos Newton taking on Renzo Gracie right away. Carlos fighting at 185. There's some people under contract within that organization, too, that would certainly be high-profile matchups for yourself.
Yeah, Carlos is a fight I've looked at trying to get involved in, and I noticed that him and Renzo ended up getting matched up. So I think, you know, that's going to be a pretty competitive fight there. I was surprised that Renzo took Pat out so easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads into my final question for you, Matt. And you, of course, are the coach of the Wolfpack in the IFL. And November 2nd, they're taking on the Anacondas. And some of the matchups for that night, for your team especially, some of the fights are looking like terrific, terrific matchups.
On the IFL card?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is going to be an unbelievable fight card. I just can't believe how good these guys match up. I can't see a match that I'm not expecting us to be very competitive and have a shot at winning. I mean, I think there's every single matchup in there, we got a chance of winning. And I'm looking at it and going into that show and trying to figure a way where each one of my guys is going to go in there and execute their game plan and get the win. And the team win will pretty much take care of itself if all the guys go out there and just execute their plans and perform to their ability.
Well, straight across the board, every matchup pretty much it could be a main event on a smaller card or one of the better fights on a bigger card. I mean, you've got Chris Horodek against Ryan Schultz, Jay Heron versus Chris Wilson, Mike Pyle versus Matt Horwich, Alex Schoenauer versus Aaron Stark, and then Devin Cole versus Krzysztof Soszynski at heavyweight. So some amazing matchups.
Yeah, those are some pretty phenomenal matchups on that card. I'm really looking forward to seeing this fight go down, and my guys are well prepared. They've been training super hard. We've been adding a lot of stuff and work going back and just focusing on a lot of basics as well, and just really, really focusing on some real basic style of fighting stuff and putting game plans in place for each guy. Every guy's got their strengths, and their opponents have weaknesses, and we're going to go in there and try to exploit those.
And before we let you go, Matt, anything going? You're a promoter, of course, in the Northwest. Anything going on that you want to tell the fans about coming up?
I don't have anything on the line right now with the IFL keep coming back into Portland, but I will definitely keep you guys updated when something happens. But I'm sure Sportfight's going to be looking to do some things here in the future.
Well, Matt, we know you've got a busy weekend ahead for us. We really appreciate you taking the time out.
Hey, you bet. You bet.
Okay, take care.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mo must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mo before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is the Inferno, Jeff Joslin. How are you doing?
I'm good, Kelsey. How's it going?
I can't complain, thanks. Now, Jeff, of course, you won this past weekend the Apex World Welterweight Championship, a TKO victory over Nuri Shakur in the first round. Maybe tell us a little bit about the fight.
I've been preparing for this fight probably since about February. I had a bunch of fights lined up, and for one reason or another, they kind of fell through here and there. The fight kind of went as I was hoping, kind of visualizing. Scored the first round KO by right hand, followed up by a little bit of ground and pound.
What did it mean for you winning the World Apex title? And some of those people who don't know a lot about Nuri, who is a pretty active fighter, maybe tell us a little bit about him as well.
Actually, before the fight, I didn't know too much about Nuri. I couldn't find too much footage on him or anything like that, but I saw his record, and it seemed pretty extensive. He had a lot of fights, so I knew he was going to come in real calm and a lot of experience and obviously be a tough guy. So I just kind of went in with that mindset. The win was a big thing for me for a few reasons. One, obviously, because it was a world title, it was so exciting. Another reason is that I had about 120 of my friends and family come down and watch the fights. And one more thing was, all the trouble that I've had in Quebec to get the win finally after two terrible decisions was such a relief and such a great feeling to do it.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a little bit about those the controversial decisions that you mentioned. We'll get into that in just a second. But mm-hmm. For someone like Nuri Shakur, I think some people, if you look at his record, he had basically a 500 record. He has a lot of fights, over 20 fights. But last year, I think he went something like 8-1. So he definitely was a fighter who was coming in against you with, I would imagine, a lot of confidence. Does that affect your preparation at all as far as going up against a guy who's had seemed to have sort of turned his career around? I mean, I know he lost his last fight before yours, but he had won 8 in a row up until that loss.
My preparation is always the same. I kind of just train, within myself to make myself, I try to strive to to get to work towards being a, you know, a well-rounded fighter, almost towards a perfect fighter. I don't think any of us can ever achieve that, but, you know, I keep working towards that. And, you know, I prepare myself like I'm going to fight for the title of the biggest organization in the world. Like, I take every fight very serious and, you know, just work like, you know, I'm fighting the best fighter in the world each time.
Now, Jeff, you're one of those fighters that I think a lot of people, sort of MMA insiders, know you for the fact that you're fairly, you know, a lot of skill, a lot of talent, black belt in jiu-jitsu, huge, extensive mixed martial arts background. Haven't competed that much, and we had John Fitch on the program, I guess it was last week, before his fight at UFC 64, and we'll talk about the John Fitch fight in particular. I'd like to talk to you about that. But he mentioned the fact that he thought you could beat a lot of the welterweights in the UFC, but maybe that you needed to take more fights, get a higher amount of fights on your record. What do you say to someone who says that? Do you agree with that notion?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement. You know, you have to earn your shot. Skill-wise, I feel, and I appreciate his comments, you know, I feel like I can, you know, fight against anybody at this point. And, you know, you do have to have your fights. You do have to get your wins just to make, you know, back up your skills to show, kind of represent that. Even though I haven't fought in the last year, I've been in the gym every single day, two or three times a day, training and working on a lot of different things that I felt I needed to work on. So I haven't had a fight again due to some circumstances, but, you know, again, I've been training all year round and I feel I'm a much stronger fighter than I was a year ago.
Now, you mentioned the circumstances, and I understand if they are personal, you wouldn't want to get into that on a public forum, but is there any reason that you can tell us about why you didn't fight in the last year?
Sure. Yeah, it's nothing really big, you know. It's just I had, you know, had the first fight lined up, and then a week before my fight, my student hits me with a knee in my eye and cuts me open for some stitches, and I wasn't able to heal that up in time, and I, you know, didn't want to go in with the stitches in my head and end up that opening with just a little touch or something like that. Then it went on. I had another fight lined up, and unfortunately, the event came apart. I was all ready for that, and they didn't end up having the show. A few other things, just here and there, just some bad luck. But I look at it as a little bit positive, too, because I've made some big gains. I've hooked up with some great trainers in fitness and strength. Also, some great wrestling coaches I've been working with for the last year. It's been awesome.
Now, going back to John Fitch fight, that was your last fight before the recent Apex one against Nuri. And it was a split decision loss against John Fitch at Freedom Fight. It was an amazing fight. I was fortunate enough to be able to see it. It was on, I can't remember if it was, I think it was TSN it was shown on. And it was a great fight for those people who haven't seen it. They should try to get some tape on it. A lot of people, Jeff, thought that you had won that fight. And John Fitch at the time was sort of an up-and-comer, just like yourself. And now he's gone on to great things in the UFC. Does that somewhat take the sting out of it a little bit, from your perspective, that even though you lost this split decision victory, that John Fitch has gone on and people can kind of look at that part of your record and say, hey, like, you know, this is regardless of the decision, or is it, you know, for you still a bitter result?
Actually, I don't know. I think I'm just the type of person to let things go right away. I think the next day I was ready to train and get back in the gym, and once I had a few small injuries from the fight, but once I was, you know, mentally I wanted to get back in the gym and get working on stuff, and, you know, I could let things go pretty much right away. And, you know, I was obviously upset at the decision. To me, I don't even look at that as a loss. I look at it as a win. If you watch the fight, if anybody watches the fight, you can see, you know, the situation. You'll be able to feel the same way I believe that I feel. John Fitch called a timeout in the last round when I hit him with a combination. And then obviously it should have been an automatic TKO, but the referee was a novice. He allowed John to have a minute and a half timeout right in the middle of the round, so it was longer than a corner break, and then asked him if he wanted to fight then, and he wanted to fight again, so we went at it. In the first round, I was hit with a headbutt, knocked my teeth out and broke my nose. You know, I didn't have the luxury of calling a timeout. I didn't know you could, and I had to keep fighting through it, and when he was jumping on top of me after I got knocked down, and I just didn't think it was a fair situation. So I look at that fight as a win by TKO, and, you know, I go from there.
And then you had the your only other loss so far in your career was against Jonathan Goulet, unanimous decision loss. And I didn't get to see that fight, but I do remember on some of the forums there was some controversy about that result as well. And having talked to you in the past and read other interviews that you've done, I know that you weren't happy with that decision either. So maybe fill us in on why you thought that you had won that fight?
The situation with that is a little bit different. It was more just the judging. If you watch the fight again, I just tell people, like, I hate talking about it almost because, right. You know, everybody who loses sometimes says, you know, well, I lost the fight, but, you know, I hate going home and saying that. So I just say to people, you know, just watch the fight, get a hold of the fight, check it out, and see what you think. You know what I mean? I don't want to really, you know, say I won and he lost. You know, watch the fight, and the idea is both the Pitch fight and the Goulet fight, people will be able to see for themselves. The Goulet fight, fortunately, has been on the Fight Network a few times, so I've got a lot of tons of emails about that. And the John Fitch fight, I believe, is just out on DVD.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I can understand. You just wanted to move on. Looking at, and on that same thread, looking ahead, have you had any talks with any other organizations, Jeff? Do you know what's in store for you coming up?
Well, we have, with this fight behind us, you know, a few opportunities have come up. So we're in negotiations right now. My manager's taking care of a bunch of things. We're talking with a few organizations and obviously talking about a title defense early in the next year. Nothing solid right now.
For those people who aren't familiar with you, Jeff, maybe tell us a little, you know, and I spoke very briefly about your background, but tell us about your martial arts background. You run a school, you're an instructor. So for those people who aren't familiar with Jeff Jolson, maybe fill us in on that side of...
Sure. Well, my father started our martial arts school in 1967, so I kind of grew up around martial arts and training, and I started when I was about 5 years old. Did a lot of martial arts tournaments and stuff when I was a kid, and as I got a little bit older, I progressed into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu about 12 years ago. I achieved my black belt under Romero Jacare Cavalcanti earlier this year. Trained extensively in wrestling with the Guelph wrestling team and the coach Dave Mayer. I boxed with my boxing trainer for many years, Vito Brancaccio. Just kind of, you know, bring in everything that I feel I need to compete in mixed martial arts events.
Right.
At this point.
Now, with the growth of mixed martial arts, and you mentioned that, you know, your father opened up a school, you know, decades ago, you've been involved in martial arts your whole life. And I ask a lot of fighters this, and they sometimes have, you know, different perspectives based on everyone as it, you know, goes, has different lives and maybe didn't grow up in martial arts, as embedded in martial arts as perhaps you have. Did you ever honestly think, even 5, 10 years ago, that the sport would become what it is now and that you might be able to be a professional athlete competing in mixed martial arts?
When I started, you know, like when I started seeing this type of stuff, I wasn't so much into jiu-jitsu. Before I got into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, when you don't do it and don't know it, you don't have that respect for those things, you know, for wrestling and for jiu-jitsu. And then when I started doing these martial arts, I just, you know, became instantly hooked on it. And then a goal of mine was to fight mixed martial arts eventually. I always had the mindset to fight around 27, and I don't know if that was because Royce Gracie was fighting at 27 at that point, and we were looking up to him, and it was just like, that was my goal, and I actually did my first fight when I was 27. But as a sport, you know, it's unbelievable how far it's come along, but, you know, you can only hold it down so much. I think it's probably the most exciting sport there is out there, mm-hmm. And it's definitely, from, you know, any sport I've seen and done myself, I think it's one of the sports you have to be so hardworking, and you have to be so, you have to have so many skills and be in such great shape to be at a higher level. You know, sure, there's a lot of fighters that only train a little bit. They neglect certain areas or they're not in top shape. But to really get to an elite level, you have to work your butt off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that when you first watched the events that it was hard to understand why, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was so integral to fighting. That and you weren't, you know, there was a lot of people out there that maybe didn't really understand the value of Jiu-Jitsu or even wrestling, for that matter. What was the turning point for you, Jeff? Did you watch some of the earlier UFCs or earlier MMA fights and just kind of think, well, you know, those guys aren't doing this or that right, and if I was in there,
yeah,
just based on your stand-ups, or did you realize right away that you needed to add elements to your own game if you ever were to compete?
Well, I'll admit I was a little bit of a, you know, coach warrior. I was, you know, I see, how he's crazy. He's like, man, throw this guy off you, man.
Yeah.
Like, it looks so easy when you're watching it. It's like, man, if Hoyt goes against a good striker, man, he's going to get knocked out. And I was like, you know, you think these things. But then he started winning and winning. I watched number 2, I think it was, and I was just like, you know, this is some good stuff. And my buddy brought in some, I think it was the Henzo Gracie first series of jiu-jitsu tapes. saw a few moves, went down to the gym right away, started practicing it pretty horribly, you know, probably, but I was instantly, I felt, you know, you could feel the leverage on the techniques, and then I was a hoist fan after that in jiu-jitsu and progressed into wrestling and just everything.
And what about for someone like your dad, who's, you know, been involved in martial arts for 4 decades? What was his kind of thoughts about it?
Actually, he's the one who started. He's gonna laugh when he hears this, but he's the one who started us doing jiu-jitsu a little bit. Years ago when we, I was like a kickboxing and karate a fighter, right? And he was like, Jeff, we're gonna start doing some jiu-jitsu. And he like threw me some small circle jiu-jitsu book. He's like, start reading this. I'm like, man, get that out of here. I kind of kicked it away. And then the great stuff came, and I kind of just got soaked up in that. And then to this day, he laughs because he was like the first one to have the idea of doing a little bit of jiu-jitsu, you know, adding it to the program.
Well, with your gym, do you guys have a fight team? Do you have some fighters coming up that we're going to be able to watch fight?
Yeah, we have, we're building up Team Inferno, Charleston's Mixed Martial Arts, kind of elite team. All the guys are really excited. They're training real hard. I have some up-and-coming guys. We have Roy McDonald. He had his first fight in Freedom Fighter Force. It didn't go according to plan, but he's hungry. He's really, really has a lot of skills. We got Gavin Hessen coming back this year, back to the ring, and Brian Edge fighting also, and a bunch of new guys that are going to really, you know, turn some heads this year, I hope.
Now, the last thing I want to ask you about, Jeff, before we let you go, back when there was additions for The Ultimate Fighter, and I don't remember, I guess it would have been for the season 3, there was a lot of speculation that you had actually made the show, and then it turned out that you hadn't. Maybe fill in, for those people who had heard certain rumblings, maybe fill in what exactly transpired. Did you audition? Were you late?
It's a long story, and it's actually, I learned a lot about, you know, getting your hopes up, and then things, you know, falling out from underneath you that way. It's like the second season, which was my weight division, 170, I sent in my audition tape, got a first call back, and she was asking me about, you know, coming to Vegas and checking my work schedule, making sure it was all right. So I'm like, hang up the phone. I'm like, yes, man, I can't believe this. I get to go down and, you know, do the further testing and all that. And just, I don't know what happened. I didn't get the second call back. They were going to call about 2 days later to book the times. And I don't know, they must have made another choice. You know, I kind of felt like I took the call early in the morning. I was kind of sleepy. Maybe I didn't show enough, like, you know, I don't know, enough life, you know, early in the morning, our time. And I don't know, you know, you always question why it didn't happen. But I think, you know, they have their own agenda and what they want to kind of look for, you know. The second time was 185. I decided to go down to the tryouts in Boston. We drove 12 hours, and we got there. I jumped right into the building. I think it was Boston Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And we did the tryouts at 185. I think I was one of the lighter guys there. Passed the grappling, passed the striking, got to the final 10 out of a couple hundred, I think. Got the interview stage, so I'm all pumped up again. Did the interviews, and right away I kind of had a feeling like, you know, they were looking for some different character. They were asking me some, you know, specific questions about my personality and stuff like that. And, you know, I was myself, and fortunately after that I didn't get the call back for the 185 show. So that's, you know, those are the two chances I had. And, you know, I think the Spike guys are more in charge of picking the athletes, I believe, from my, I would guess.
Well, you mentioned the person, the character side of things, and that, you know, when you look at some of the actual fight cards, the where they have the finals, and those continue to do quite well rating-wise, but
yeah.
I think even this season, where you have the comeback season with fighters that have been in the UFC, the show is beginning to struggle for ratings despite its early tremendous successes. Do you think that's part of the reason? Is that first season, people really got into the character side? Let's face it, there was a lot of animosity in the house between people like Bobby Southworth, Chris Leben. And that really introduced the sport to a lot of people, and it kind of seems the last couple of years, you know, the fighters are more, there's a lot more camaraderie, there's not any of these kind of rivals, and that's not really what MMA should be about anyways, that's not what
right.
I'm trying to say, but what are your own thoughts on that? Do you think this show is going to continue on much longer in its current format, or do you think it might eventually just, you know, go down to a weekly sort of live card on Spike TV, similar to boxing?
I don't know how the you know, the business part of that works, like, you know, what choices they make when they drop to a certain level, or what they do, if they just make changes. I think, you know, it's a TV show. You gotta have the people that are gonna bring the, you know, the mass of people to watch it, you know what I mean? So it's like, but I think it's hard, you know, they're making a kind of a guessing game when they're picking people, you know what I mean? You need those characters, you need things to happen, but how can you know somebody and talk to them for 2 minutes, you know what I mean? You can't see anything about their, you know, if they're a funny guy, if they're, you know, they, what they do in different situations, you know what I mean? It's kind of a guessing game, and I think, you know, they'll continue to run the show, and if they pick the right people and get it back to that, you know, those initial seasons, I think they can, you know, do well with it for sure. Because it's an awesome show, and I think from what I hear from people around the city and stuff, they're all watching it and checking it out, and, you know, I guess it's the overall picture that's the most important.
Right. Well, Jeff, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're a busy man, and congratulations once again on winning the Apex World Welterweight Championship.
Thanks a lot, Kelsey. And also, if I get one more chance at the show, man, I have a good character in mind. I'm going to be acting it up. I'm going to be ready, man. It's going to be crazy. I'm going to take my teeth out. But you know that they got knocked out in the fight with Fitch, right?
Right.
I'm going to have some. I got it all planned out. So one more chance, you know?
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll look forward to your alter ego on the Ultimate Fighter, possibly.
Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Okay, take care. Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, as we get ready for the Pride American debut this weekend, I just wanted to hear your thoughts first off about the card. Are you pretty excited about this card as you look at it in its entirety, or is it kind of one of those that doesn't really strike you?
At first, it's tough, you know, because at first I wasn't really excited about it, but then I think back to, you know, what are you comparing it to? Well, the last Pride card was probably in my humble opinion, probably the best, if not one of the, you know, the two or three best MMA shows ever put on. So is this one going to be that? No. So in a sense, it's slightly less exciting. But at the same time, all of the fights, in that, when I think about it carefully, when I look at the fights carefully, all of them have potential to be real barn burners. So I think it'll be it's one of these cards where I'm going in with few expectations, and hopefully I'll come out pleasantly surprised.
First fight I wanted to break down is Phil Baroni versus Yusoki Nishima. And both these guys need a win. Obviously, you know, Phil Baroni, who had turned his career around somewhat in Pride, has run into some trouble as of late. And then Nishima has yet to win. Both these guys are known for their stand-up capabilities, and Nishima, former boxer. Who are you predicting in this fight?
It'll be interesting to see what Baroni does. I think, you know, Baroni has the ability to probably take him down. That would be the safest course of action in terms of pounding out a win. But it'll be interesting to see if Baroni stands. I could see him standing with him to put on a good show. And then if he gets in trouble, then going to the ground. But we'll see. I think this one they match to hopefully see the fist fly early.
Mm. So who are you picking?
I gotta go with Baroni. Read a post the other day. He did on one of the forums defending himself and Mark Coleman, and made actually some very articulate points about Coleman and his record. So I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true. Props to Baroni.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Baroni as well. I think that from some of his appearances in Pride, it's clear that he's put together a better game plan. His conditioning's been good. You know, he has some tough losses lately, but I think if you look at someone like Nishima, who doesn't have that much experience and has had troubles in all of his fights, I think that Baroni he'll probably stand with him for a bit, and maybe he could get knocked out by Nishima. That's always a chance going up against a good boxer like that, but I would suspect that they'll probably have Baroni go for the takedown. I think he should be able to do that, and I think he'll be able to, you know, get a ground and pound kind of victory, I think.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he went for the takedown right away. I think Baroni is always one of these guys who wants to prove himself on his feet. So we'll see. We'll see. I think it'll be interesting.
Joey Villasenor, who was on the program a couple weeks ago, of course, taking on Robbie Lawler. This fight's going to be really interesting, too, talking about two guys that want to bang, go at it standing, and I think both these fighters are going to be prepared to do that, at least test the waters in that respect. Robbie Lawler coming off a tough loss to Jason Mayhem Miller. Villasenor has really had a remarkable career streak in the last couple of years. Who are you picking, Brendan?
Yeah, I think this is a tough one for me. I think it depends on the kind of shape that Lawler comes in on. I think he's one of these guys who has all the tools, but it depends very much on the context in which he trains and where his head's at. And Villasenor seems to be a fairly solid guy. I'm actually surprised that he dropped his first fight in Pride. But I've got to go, I think, with Villasenor on this one. I got to go with the Jackson camp, and I know for a fact that his head's probably not going to be an issue here, whereas Lawler's very well might. Well, you know, Lawler's lost to Mayhem. He admitted that he gassed in the third round and basically lost the fight in his training. So it's tough. I don't think that's going to happen to Villasenor, and it's always a question. You know, is he back for good? Is Lawler back or is he not?
Yeah, this one's a really tough one to call. I think a lot of people have Villasenor actually beating Chonin. He lost the split decision victory there, so that was a close fight. And you know, I want to go with Villasenor, but there's some part of me that has this feeling that Lawler, who is kind of due for a win as far as against bigger names, I think I'm going to go with Lawler in this fight. I'm not really sure why I'm making that call. It's just kind of like a gut feeling, but I think that maybe he's going to be able to get Villasenor in some trouble on the stand-up end of things. But you know, I could very easily be wrong on that prediction.
Are you saying you have some kind of MMA sixth sense?
Exactly. The MMA gods are speaking to me. Next up, Nakamura Kezahiro versus Travis Galbraith, who has been named as the replacement for Marvin Eastman, who's out due to some contract problems with the WFA, apparently. And as well, he had a hand injury, which kept him out of his fight with Vernon White here in Vancouver a couple weeks ago. Travis Galbraith, for people who aren't familiar with him, he's the King of the Cage light heavyweight champion here in Canada. He's got a decent amount of experience, but never on any kind of international scale, you know, like a UFC or Pride event. As much as, you know, I think Travis is going to surprise some people, especially if he comes into this fight in shape, which is tough to say. He only got this fight apparently on a few days' notice. I think he Travis will surprise some people, but that being said, I think I have to go with Nakamura.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Nakamura. It'll be interesting to see how the Japanese fighters adapt, because normally, you know, you're watching Pride shows, if the North American fighters go over too late, then they always inevitably fight with jet lag, and that has all its interesting complications. So it'll be interesting to see how when the Japanese fighters came over and to see them cope with some of these variables that have been solved. But I can't see Nakamura letting this one go. He's got definitely decent stand up, but his ground is fairly awesome. So I can't see him letting this one slip through his fingers. But you never know. So I'm going to go with Nakamura.
Well, judging by the numerous events Pride's been having coming up to this show, I think that most of the Japanese contingent have probably been in town for a few days.
I would hope, yeah. I would hope that's enough time for them to get that sorted out. But who knows? That, you know, jet lag is interesting. It affects some people for a couple of days, and it affects some people for a whole week. So
then next up is Dan Henderson versus Vitor Belfort. That's a very interesting matchup, and I know we've made comments about this the last couple of weeks. It's clear the Pride here is trying to put together a matchup that features two ex-UFC fighters that are likely quite familiar with, you know, maybe American or Canadian MMA fans who don't follow the sport internationally. So an interesting matchup in that respect.
Yeah, it's funny to hear. It's funny to think of Henderson as being an ex-UFC fighter. It's been so long now. He's been in Pride for so long. But it'll be interesting to see which Hendo shows up for this. Is it going to be Hendo, the stand-up guy, or is he going to try and go back to the old ground and pound against Vitor? And this fight has the potential to be either the biggest letdown or the best fight on the card. I think it could swing. To me, it could swing either way.
I really think that, I'll make my prediction here first. I really think that this is going to unfold not too dissimilar to Randy Couture, Vitor Belfort, number two, to be honest, or number three, I guess it'd be. I think that Henderson has a lot to lose if he was to lose this fight. I think that he'll probably go for the takedowns. I know he's been working with Sean Tompkins, working on stand-up, and Matt Lindland alluded to that in their interview, in the interview with Matt today. But I think Henderson will probably go for the takedown. He might try to hang with him briefly, but I think he'll try to get a ground-and-pound win and play it safe, and I think Henderson wins this one.
Here's my prediction for the fight. Henderson is actually winning, but as payback for saying on a radio show that Matt Lindland would fight his wife for enough money, that Lindland will actually hit Henderson over the back of the head with a collapsible chair.
Really? Interesting.
All on pro wrestling. That's what my prediction is. Technical draw due to third-party interference.
Fair enough. Great prediction, Brennan.
But if I had to pick the fight, it would be, I think, Hendo.
So right now we're only disagreeing on one result so far.
Well, you copy me all the time, right? So
right.
Tough.
Josh Barnett versus Paolo Nastula. I know Nastula is one of your favorites, Brendan, you coming from the judo background.
I love him.
You do. You judo guys are thick as thieves. So, you go first. I'm tired of you predicting all the time.
I like Nastula a lot. I think they certainly haven't done him any favors in Pride, and he's got he got a win on his last fight, but his first two losses were decent losses, Big Nog and to Alexander Melnyenko. So I think again, though he's in tough, I can't see him submitting Barnett, so therefore I can't see him winning the fight. So I gotta go with Barnett on this one, but my heart goes out to Nastula, and it would be interesting to see. I think he's gonna put on a decent show, but I can see him finishing the fight, but I can't see him winning against Barnett.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with anything you just said. I cannot. Obviously, it's mixed martial arts. There's always an opportunity for getting a win through various routes, but as far as betting or making a prediction, there's no way I can see Nastula winning this fight. The next fight, Mauricio Shogun Rua versus Kevin Randleman, will be Rua's first return since dislocating his elbow against Mark Coleman. And this is an interesting matchup for Pride. I think just in the sense that even when they put Shogun up against Mark Coleman, he's returning from an injury. He's going up against a guy like Kevin Randleman, who is obviously noted for his wrestling accomplishments, his takedown capabilities. So it's an interesting decision on Pride's part to put in Shogun, who they clearly would like to groom as their next big star, up against a fighter like Randleman, who matches up against Shogun very well, I think.
I want to say Randleman's going to win this fight, to be provocative, and I probably would say that, but the only thing that's preventing me from saying that is you don't know where Randleman's head's at and where his training's gone. He's had numerous operations in the last couple of years and all sorts of personal stuff going on, so I know he's coming into the fight with a lot of bravado, and I know he's talking a good game, but I'm hesitant to pick him because of, I think he'd have a good chance if he was right on 100% Kevin Randleman of old, but I don't know. I'm going to go with him despite that, so let's go with Randleman for the big upset.
Oh, okay. I'm going to stick with Hura. I think that even though it is going to be a close fight, he showed me a lot, and especially his fight against Arona, his ability to get out from underneath, and he's very active on the ground. He's good at reversals, and I think that Randleman will have trouble keeping him down. He could do it, but I'm going to go with Hua. But I think it is going to be a close fight. But I'm going to go with Hua. And then, of course, the main event: Fedor Emelianenko versus Mark the Hammer Coleman. This is a rematch. Fedor armbarred Mark Coleman in the previous engagement. Coleman had taken Fedor down, briefly had his back. What are your thoughts, Brendan, on this fight?
Well, I think Coleman, and I'm personally full victim to this as well, underestimate him as a fighter, but as the ever articulate Phil Baroni points out, you know, his losses are unbelievable, you know, unbelievably decent losses, you know, to the likes of Prokop and Fedor. But again, he's fighting Fedor, so he can't be, it would be insane to pick against Fedor. I think this might be a decent fight, but I think this is probably the big, you could argue, out of all the big fights in the cards, probably the most obvious mismatch.
Well, I think the one thing about this fight is, you're right, I mean, Mark Coleman, sometimes people underestimate him. His losses do come against some of the better fighters in the world. He does have great takedowns, even though against someone like Prokop, he had difficulty taking Prokop down. But for me, the real reason that I have to say that I think there's a great, great certainty that Fedor is going to win this is because so far in Fedor's career, other than a brief glimpse of him getting hit with that hard right hand against Fujia, he's looked mentally very, very stable. There's no reason to believe that he won't be well prepared for this fight, that he'll underestimate Mark Coleman. It just seems that every fight this guy comes into, even when you look at him before the fight starts, he's this very concentrated, almost emotionless-looking man who just is out there to fight, and I just can't see him. The only way I can see Fedor not winning this fight is if he were to come in horribly out of shape or underestimate Mark Coleman in some respect, and I just can't see that happening. It's his American debut. There's actually been some fanfare around Fedor coming to the States, even in mainstream media. So, yeah, I think that he's going to actually come out here very primed and ready to go. And I actually think that this fight, compared to the Randleman Shogun fight, I could see Fedor getting like a knockout or TKO win in the first round.
I could see that, too. And this is Fedor's coming out party for the world. So,
yeah.
I think I can't see him. You know, you can't see him being unprepared. You can't see him being shaken. You can't see him being, you know, he recovers so well from being rocked as well. So I just can't imagine. It's tough for me, and I have a good imagination, to see Mark Coleman solving Fedor in any way. You know, the dude makes like $1 million a fight, and his favorite food is borscht, so you can tell he likes fighting.
I think that the interesting thing for this, too, will be where Pride goes after this card. You know, when you look at sometimes the matchups, the way Pride does their matchmaking in comparison to other organizations, the UFC or any other big North American organization, the fights aren't always necessarily designed to funnel guys into title shots. And this card, I think, is quite clear that is, you know, that this card, the way it was put together, there's really no theory behind it in that respect. I mean, if Randleman was to beat Shogun, are they going to start grooming him for a title shot? Probably not. If Coleman wins,
well, see, that's the thing, and I don't know if it's a cultural thing or what, but it's always tough to anticipate what the guys in Pride are thinking behind the scenes, or sometimes if they're thinking. But then again, they tend to pull it out. They tend to pull it out of their hat, and they pulled it out more than once. One of the things that I wonder about is whether or not they're trying to make a big splash in the same way that WFA did with ex-UFC fighters or fighters that have some kind of, you know, that kind of needle the UFC or what have you. And I think the WFA show was a little bit too much of that. And I think the Pride show is maybe a little bit too much of that as well. So if they have, if they have all these guys that are more noteworthy, is it going to be the case that they're also going to put on a good show? And I think that's one of the things they should have worried a little bit more about. But we'll see. We'll see if their attempted balance works out for them.
Yeah, like I said, they're just a lot of this fight, this card doesn't. There's not really any championship kind of organization goes. I mean, if you look at Dan Anderson versus Vitor Belfort, Dan Anderson is not even fighting within his normal Pride weight division, and Vitor Belfort, you know, I suppose if he was to win this fight, it'd be somewhat of an upset, and they could start grooming him against Wanderlei Silva down the road, but which it would be an intriguing matchup. So maybe there is some theory behind that matchup. But
well, yeah, I don't know. It's almost as if, you know, this Pride card could go off, and nothing could change in Japan. Like, they could have the next Pride card, and this one, to me, this one potentially could have absolutely no implications for the next one. So I'm not sure whether they want to establish a brand with two sort of streams, you know, sort of North American stream and a Japanese stream, or what. But it will be interesting to see what they do next. Yeah, I agree with you.
And yeah, I think on that end of things, even though I am excited to watch this card, when you look at the upcoming Bushido card, and we've got the 183-pound finals, Grand Prix finals, and you know, Takanori Gomi will be competing again against Marcus Aurelio. That card, to me, as far as what transpires and what is at risk, makes that event more compelling than this one.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And strangely enough, you know, the last one wasn't even on pay-per-view, so the American audience got to see some of it, but Canadians didn't get to see any of it on TV anyway, and you couldn't even get it on pay-per-view, so it will be... I don't exactly know what they're doing with Bushido, but I think Bushido has definite potential because the fights, again, are more dynamic, and obviously the best Japanese fighters are all smaller guys.
Well, and I know you haven't had a chance to listen to the Matt Lindland interview because you weren't with me for that today, but when you listen to Matt Lindland, and he consistently talks, and I've heard him say this, not only did he say this the prior time he was on our show, but in other interviews, and it is just so true, is that he just continually says, you know, it's just ridiculous, and I'm paraphrasing, but the fact that these fighters, that they have to enter into 3-4 fight deals, and it's with one organization, and there's all these restrictions on these guys fighting elsewhere. And I just really think that the sport is kind of reaching its saturation point in North America, in the sense that for each event, and it's really getting to the point now where I think it's crucial that we begin to, that these organizations start to talk about having one world champion. I mean, when you look at the potential, just in the, when you think about Bushido, and the reason I started thinking about this is, you're right, I mean, we Canadians didn't even get to see much of the last Bushido card. And when you look at the potential matchups, you know, with Anderson Silva versus possibly Matt Lindland, or against whoever wins the Grand Prix, whether Paulo Filho or Dennis Kang, or with Dan Henderson for his championship, the matchups there, and I know it's kind of an obvious argument, are so intriguing now, more than ever, that it's just, it is kind of a shame that, to be honest, that some of the, you know, you see these cards and some of the fights could be so much better. You know, it's, I guess what I'm trying to say in a long-winded sense is that I think a lot of us sort of envisioned Pride eventually coming to the States, and really hoped that when Pride came, it would feature, finally, a lot of crossover fights, or at least a couple, between UFC champions and Pride champions. Mm-hmm. And that's not what has happened, unfortunately.
Well, I think the sad thing is that the UFC, and I'll attribute this to the UFC, they see this as being a zero-sum game. So if we win, Pride loses, and if Pride wins, we lose. And I think that's completely the wrong way to see MMA evolving. MMA has the potential to take over boxing. MMA has phenomenal potential for a worldwide sport, and the only way to do that is by sort of garnering interest and saying, you know, who the hell is this Anderson Silva that came in and knocked out our champion? So you can't hesitate to make fights like that, and to say that, you know, there are all these wonderful different places in the world where that are MMA hotspots, and where are the best fighters, and wouldn't it be great if so and so fought so and so, you know? And I think more and more, you know, as the people who were introduced to MMA via Spike and Tough start realizing that, you know, just think to yourself the first time, you know, that you heard of someone great, a great Japanese fighter, a great Russian fighter, you know, and, you know, figuring out where they came from, what their, you know, where, how they got where they were and how good they were, you know, seeing some of those early fights, they're phenomenal, right? And it's Pride, both Pride and the UFC have, everything to lose and nothing to gain by just trying to corner out, just trying to carve out a certain territory and, not even mention the other organization. That's just simply foolish, you know. You see how boxing, in the golden days in the 80s and 90s of boxing, they prospered because there was a united world champion, you know.
Well, but they've had their problems with promoters and controlling certain fighters as well. I mean, sometimes fans have waited years for marquee matchups to materialize because of bickering promotions or TV deals between HBO or whatever, right?
Yeah, and exactly, and those opportunities are lost. Those opportunities are so easily lost because of the way it's a dangerous sport, and fighters may be in their prime and be headed towards one another for a year or two. And who wants to see? Do you want to see Chuck Liddell, Wanderlei Silva, in 3 or 4 years from now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so in a sense, they're robbing old school and new school fans of these great potential matchups. I think just out of fear, you know, maybe our market share will slip, or what happens if Liddell or Silva lose against one another, and so on and so forth. Well, who cares, right? It's the story that's interesting, and one fight never solves anything.
No, right? and that's the most troubling thing about all this is accusations fly back and forth, and we don't really know unless you're behind the scenes. You don't really know who is. You know, who's not really working towards a joint Pride UFC card or whatever the case may be. And it is too bad. And even with Matt Lilland on the show, you know, I asked him his thoughts on whether or not he felt that the Jeremy Horn-Matt Lilland fight was hyped up enough that it received the coverage that it deserved. And he said no. So, you know, that was a fight between two of the best middleweight fighters in the world. Mm-hmm. And there was certainly some fanfare from hardcore MMA fans. But other than that, you know, not that much fanfare behind it. So,
yeah, and that was Lindland doing his best Hendo impression of a stand-up fighter. So,
yeah.
So it was a great fight if you saw it.
On that note, Brendan,
good luck to you, Kelsey. And then, did you figure out whether or not this is going to be a 4.5-hour pay-per-view?
No, I didn't.
Good job with that, Kelsey.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy. I think, though, if you look at it, when's the last time Pride had a 4.5-hour pay-per-view?
Well, I don't know. That was the rumor. We'll see.
Yeah. Let's go. Well, enjoy the fights, and we'll talk to you after the weekend.
Fantastic. See you later, Kelsey.